Okay, so thank you very much for inviting me again. Being that we are now officially in, technically, we are in Rosh Chodesh Kislev, we're approaching Kislev, technically maybe yes, technically maybe no, but we're close enough. So I want to talk about an aspect that relates to Chanukah, but not something we usually talk about, and that is the gambling that occurs on Chanukah. People like to play dreidel. The playing of dreidel is a holy, holy custom going back centuries amongst the Jewish people. We're not going to talk about the playing of dreidel. That's another discussion for another time. But what comes along with playing dreidel is gambling. And sometimes a dreidel game can be a low-stakes gamble for a few raisins or a few pennies. And depending on the house, a dreidel game can be a high-stakes with hundreds of dollars on the line. It can get very intense. So what we want to talk about tonight is, in general, a Torah perspective on gambling. And if you still remember, if you're still living off the residual excitement of the Mega Millions of a few weeks ago, I know nobody here is from South Carolina, but perhaps also, what does the Torah say about gambling in light of lottery? So let's begin. Even before we discuss gambling, what the Torah says about gambling, we need to understand a principle in halacha first. So we're going to spend the first half explaining this principle, and that is the concept of an asmachta. And asmachta is as follows. That generally, when in halacha, when a person says they are going to do something, we don't second guess what they say. If a person says he's going to give this much money, he's going to give this much staka, he's going to go here, buy this, do here, sit this, whatever it may be, we don't second guess. We don't assume that the person would not have meant what he said. However, there is a type of thing where if a person makes a declaration to promise a certain amount of money, perhaps the halacha says he didn't really mean it. And this is the principle of asmachta. So we'll give an example. A person owes money, and he's paid back half the money. A person owes $1,000, and he's paid back $500. And now the time is up. It's time to pay back the rest of the money. And the guy says, I'm good for the money. I'll give you the $500. However, what? I don't have it right now. But to show you that I'm going to get you the money, if I don't get you back the $500 that I owe you to pay off the rest of the debt, then I'm going to obligate myself to pay all $1,000 again. I'll pay you the whole value of the debt from the beginning. So the lender will end up making how much if he doesn't pay? $1,500. He'll make up $1,500. So I'll promise to pay you another $500 if I don't make it by the deadline. Now, the deadline comes, and time is up. Where's the $500? So I don't have it. So the lender then says, so you owe me $1,000 now. So in such a case, the halacha says, asmachta lo kanya. If a person makes a declaration to promise money, but he didn't really mean it, the way he promised the money indicates that he didn't really think he was going to have to pay $1,000. What did he say? Why did he say he's going to pay the full value of the debt? Because he wanted to show the lender that he's good for the money. He wanted to, emphasize his points. So that's what we call an asmachta. When a person makes a promise of money, but he doesn't really mean to make that promise when he makes that declaration. Because it's unlikely he would ever want him to really pay that money at the end of the day. So we're now going to go through three times in halacha where we say or we don't say that asmachta works. Meaning if a person makes such a declaration, such a strange declaration, do we say he has to pay the money or doesn't have to pay the money? So the first case I think we have here on the sheets, is the following case. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Ayin Gimel tells the case of money of an individual who gave money to a shaliach, a messenger, to go buy him wine that was on sale. And the messenger was negligent. He overslept. He didn't make it to the sale to get the wine. So the halach is in such a case that the messenger does not have to reimburse the person who sent him to get the wine, even though the person who sent him to get the wine lost out on a deal. Maybe you'll say, I could have saved $500 if you would have bought me the wine on time. You didn't. So now you owe me $500 because your negligence led to my loss. So the Gemara says, the shaliach, the messenger, never has to pay. Not at all. Then the Gemara brings the following case. This speaks about hiring someone to manage a property, to manage a building. Okay, you hire a manager for the building. And the guy says, I'm going to take care of the building, everything's going to work great. And the manager of the building that you hire doesn't take care of the building. So what's the halacha in such a case? Whatever damages incur because the manager of the building didn't take care of the building, he has to pay the owner, because he has to pay the landlord because he was irresponsible in his job. So the question is, what's the difference? In the first case, the guy didn't get the wine. He goes off scot-free. He doesn't have to pay. In the second case, the gentleman didn't take care of the building, and he was responsible. So the Gemara says, and the halacha comes out, that in the case of the person who went to buy the wine, there are a lot of factors that would dictate, that would prevent him from getting the wine. The price goes up, they run out of wine, there's traffic, the car's broken. There's a lot of things in the way that would prevent him from reaching his goal. And since it is not, as the halacha says, biyado, it's not in his hand, it's not within his control to necessarily get the wine, so in such a case, the halacha says that it's not his fault, and we don't hold him responsible, because there are other things that may have prevented him, besides his alarm clock not going on time. However, in the case of the landlord, everything I need to be a manager of the building is biyado. I can take care of anything. I can collect the rent, and I can, you know, fix the piping. All those things to take care of the property, the land, to plant the carrots, whatever it may be, that is in my control. And therefore, the first halacha is that if a person makes a declaration or a promise to do something, and that promise is contingent on other factors out of his control, then we don't hold him responsible to keep his word. That's a case where the asmacht, his declaration, we wouldn't hold him responsible. But if a person makes a declaration or a promise to do something, and the factors are within his hand, then halacha says, you have to live up. No matter what the promise is, you have to live up to your promise. That's case number one. The second case here we have, which is letter B, is you hire a contractor to build a house. And the contractor promises you in writing that the house will be done within a year. A year comes, I'm sure we know the story, and the house is not done. Nothing against contractors, but from what I'm told, sometimes it doesn't happen, the house isn't done within a year. So the contractor says, I got it. I'll finish the house within the next year. I'll make another deadline, and I'm good for it, I promise you. And if I don't finish it within the deadline, I will pay a significant penalty every month. I'll pay $5,000 a month for every month I'm over, because you're not in your house on time. So what's the halacha in such a case? Well, let's go back to our first case. If the contractor is building the entire house by himself, and he's relying on nobody else, this is a very chashuv contractor, he's doing everything by himself, then it's biyado, it's in his hand, right? He controls all the factors, so then he would be responsible. But let's say it's a normal contractor, he has workers. Some days the workers come in late, they're not timed, there's whatever, it's not in control of his hands, it's not biyado, so then perhaps we would say he's not responsible. But let's agree for a second, we have a very, very impressive contractor, he builds entire houses by himself. It's like the Amish, they put up like a whole house of wood, like in 2 days they work together and the house is done. So he's a very chashuv contractor, he's very good, he builds the whole house by himself. And he says, I'm going to pay you an outlandish amount of money, crazy amount of money, if I don't get the house done within the month. So what's the halacha in such a case? Does he have to pay that money if the deadline comes? So the halacha is no. That's the principle of asmachta. And this is the second principle, because he spoke in hyperbole. He made a guzma. He said an outlandish number. Why did he say that number? Why did the contractor say that? He didn't think it was going to happen. He had no intention. Of course he was going to finish this up. He came up with a ridiculous number. Why? Because it'll make you feel better as the owner of the house that it'll get done on time. But he had no intention of that ever happening. He thought he was going to get it done on time.
It also stopped the owner from going someplace else.
100%.
So the owner takes a loss now.
Correct. So the rule is as follows. If the contractor said something outlandish like $10,000 a month if I don't finish on time, you're not going to make the contractor pay. It's not feasible. He never really intended to pay it. However, if the contractor said something reasonable like this, if I don't finish the house on time, then every month that you suffer a loss, I'll pay for it. You got to pay to rent somewhere else. I'll pay the rent. You got to pay the heating bills. You got whatever it may be. Whatever loss you suffer because you're not in your house on time, so I'll pay for that. In such a case, does the contractor have to pay? Yeah. Most likely. Because that's a reasonable statement. It's a reasonable promise to make. I gave you a time limit, you didn't make it, so you got to pay if you're going to suffer because of my being tardy on the house. So this is principle number two. If a person makes an outlandish statement, an outlandish amount, guzma, hyperbole, then we don't hold him to it because the assumption was he never really intended to make that promise on that money. Let's talk about the third case. And that is the case of Gemiras Das. Let's talk about another case. The Shulchan Aruch, this is based on a Rambam, discusses a case of someone who put a deposit on a property that was not refundable if the buyer backs out. We have such ideas before, right? You put down a non-refundable deposit on the property. However, the potential buyer didn't want to feel like he was the only one who would lose his deposit. So he wanted the potential seller to do the following. That if you back out of selling me the property, so you're going to pay me twice the amount of the deposit. Therefore, that would make everybody suffer a loss, right? So if the buyer backs out, he suffers the deposit. And if the seller backs out, so then he has to pay, he already has the deposit in his control, but he'll have to pay more for backing out of selling. So what's the halacha in such a case? So if the seller backs out, so the halacha is, and this is what the Shulchan Aruch says, I know it does not seem like what we would say in American law, but the halacha is that if the seller backs out, he doesn't have to pay. He doesn't have to pay what he promised. Why? Because a seller would almost never backs out of the sale. Rarely will he back out. And when the seller puts down that extreme price to pay twice the amount of deposit, he never thought that was going to happen. It's not a normal case. He said that because he wanted to make sure, you know, the buyer would go through. And that's what the Rambam says. If the buyer walks away, then the halacha is that the seller keeps the deposit. And why don't we say asmachta lo kanya? Why don't we say here that the buyer and the potential buyer, he didn't intend to back out, so why are we holding to the money here? So this is the idea of gemiras das. Gemiras das means I've shown you that I agree with an action. What's the action? What's the greatest action the potential buyer could have done to show that he's serious about handing over this deposit? He handed over the money. Meaning, if he would have put the money in escrow with a third party and he would have said, I'm going to put the money by over here, and if you back out, we'll decide what's with the money, then that would show what? That he doesn't really intend to give the money away. But if the potential buyer takes $10,000 and puts it in the bank account of the seller, there's no greater sign of his willingness to depart with the money in a potential circumstance than actually giving over the money. So these are the three cases where we would say the asmachta, the person's opinion, maybe a person would have backed out if he didn't hand over money versus if he handed over money, he said something in hyperbole versus a normal amount, or the person is biyado, it's in my control to affect the circumstance of what's going on. So now that we have a better picture of asmachta, let's turn now to gambling. So this took us 12 minutes. So now with this background, we can understand gambling a little bit better. Because there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin in the third parak. The Gemara says that a gambler is pasul eidus. A person who gambles cannot testify in court. They can't serve as a witness at a wedding. They can't serve as a witness for a get. They are no good to be a witness in any form of halacha. So the Gemara then has a machlokas about what's going on over here. The Gemara here is listing other people that are pasul eidus, that are invalid for witnesses, a child, all different types of issues that people come up. But midzarabanan, according to the rabbis, the person who gambles is no good. What's the reason why? So you have here on the sheet of machlokas between Rami Bar Chama and Rav Sheshas. Rami Bar Chama says that gambling is asmachta. Why? Because when we sit down to the poker table, okay? We sit down to the poker table, and I say, I'm in for $20 on this hand. So in such a case, when a person gambles in a game of, let's say a game of skill, somewhat skill, knowledge, like poker, when they say that I'm going to pay $20, do they think that they're going to lose? No. When you sit down to the poker table, you have every intention to do what?
To win.
Why are you playing if you think you're going to lose? So of course you have intention to win. So when the person says out loud, I'm in for 20, what they're really saying is, I'm in for 20 because I'm going to get yours. I'm going to win. And I have no intention of giving my 20 up. And therefore, Rami Bar Chama says that every single time you win in a poker hand and you take somebody else's money, what are you doing? You're stealing his money. It's gezel midarabanan. Because that person didn't really want to give away his money. It's a rabbinic form of stealing. Now, we come out with a very big kula though. What's the kula? What's the big leniency? If you are the worst poker player of all time, and you've never won a hand, so what does that mean? You've never stolen any money, and therefore you're fine. You're a good eight. If you're a terrible poker player, and you've never won, then you can be a witness at a wedding, whatever you want, because you never stole any money, according to Rami Bar Chama. That would be a kula. Who follows this? The Rambam. The Rambam says this is the halacha. This is the halacha, that if a person gambles, and they win, so they are pasul eidus. Now, the Rambam also says it only applies to a Jew, because this is stealing, this is a rabbinic form of stealing, and the rabbis did not extend this to non-Jews. So if you gamble with, also another leniency is you only gamble with non-Jews, and you take their money, so that's not stealing, because the rabbis did not decree this as a form of stealing. Again, we already see, it's like, it's not really stealing, it's like, it's this like weird form of kind of stealing, because you didn't really actually take the money. But this is the opinion of Rami Bar Chama. And this is one shita. Rav Sheshes is the next opinion. This is 3b. Rav Sheshes says, no. Gambling is a problem. Why? Because it's not nice. It's not proper mitos. A person makes his livelihood by gambling and exchanging money. It's not a nice thing for a Jewish boy to make a parnasa that way. So therefore, Rav Sheshes says, if you have a day job, and at night you go home and you gamble a little bit, and you go to the boats, or you go to the casinos, whatever it is, you're fine. Because it's not how you make your money. But if you are a professional gambler, they used to show like on ESPN, like, you know, the World Series of Poker. So if you're a professional gambler, then that would be a problem. Because it says something about a person's personality, that they engage in this type of activity regularly, and therefore, this is the problem. Now, why isn't gambling an asmachta? How come Rav Sheshes doesn't think gambling is a problem of stealing? So Rashi says that an asmachta really means that you don't mean it. But if you're dealing with something that is totally random, if you're playing a game that's totally out of your control, let's say you play dice, okay? Or you play roulette, whatever it may be. So in those games, there's no skill. It's total a game of chance. So in those cases, everyone who steps up to the table knows what? That I'm pretty much giving away my money. In those games of chance, where there's no skill involved, so that, says Rav Sheshes, according to Rashi, is where everything is fine. The gray area is going to be games where there's some sort of skill involved. Card games, things like that. Person or horse racing, I don't know, we could debate this out as horse racing. But those types of things where there's other factors just besides chance, so those areas become a little bit more difficult. So there's a question of stealing midorabanan to oraisa. So what's the difference in such cases? And it's important to know if this is only midorabanan, so then if you gamble, and before you gamble you say, everything I win, I pledge to tzedakah, so tzedakah gets the money still. Because tzedakah collects the money even if it's stealing midorabanan. So if you say, you know, I'm playing poker tonight, and everything I win goes to Chai Lifeline, so then the Chai Lifeline still gets the money. Because tzedakah collects the money if it's only stealing midorabanan. That's a nafkamina if it's midorabanan d'oraisa. Okay. So this is approach number one. And this is also the sheet of the Ramah. So it comes out we have a machlogus from Sfardim and Ashkenazim regarding gambling. Sfardim, who follow the Rambam, will have an issue playing any form of skill gambling. Ashkenazim, according to the Rambam, Ashkenazim, who follow the Ramah, would come out that perhaps gambling is okay, as long as it's not your profession. But again, it's unclear what type of gambling, what level we're speaking at. Let's look now at a second Gemara. That was a Gemara Sanhedrin. The other place where gambling appears, or lotteries, or games of chance appear in the Gemara, is the Gemara in Shabbos. So the Gemara in Shabbos says as follows. This is a Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Mem Tes, and this is cited in Shulchan Aruch, in Shin Chav Beis. They discuss the situation where you're having a suda. You're sitting at the table, your children, your grandchildren, and it's time for dessert. So you bring out a chocolate cake, okay? It was dark in the kitchen, so you didn't divide up all the pieces evenly. If you divided all the pieces evenly, there's no problem making a lottery to decide who gets which piece. Because you're not making a lottery to see who's a winner, you're just making a lottery because your grandchildren are all over the wall, and you need them to sit down, so this will get everybody to calm down. But let's say one slice of chocolate cake is, you know, 1 inch wide, and another one is 3 inches wide. And this is the thing, I want this one, that we've heard this over, I want the piece with the rose on it, right, I want the one with the lettering on it, and they're fighting over which is the best piece. We're familiar with such a machlokas before? This is a big discussion. So, what do you do in such a case? So the Gemara says, you may not make a lottery on Shabbos to decide who gets which piece. That's what the Gemara says, that's the halacha here in Shulchan Aruch. And everyone says it's usur. So the question is, how could this be when the Ramah says in Choshen Mishpat that lotteries are mutter? What's the difference between the two cases? So the Magen Avraham says, no, you got it all wrong. The Ramah always says that gambling and lotteries are usur. He always says that they're a problem. The question is, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, does it make you invalid to be a witness? It's bad. The question is only, how bad? Fine. That's one approach. The other approach is from the Shilta Giborim. The Shilta Giborim says that in the case of making a bet about an event, so this is an asmachta, because each person thinks what? I'm going to win. I put money down, you put money down. I put money down because I think I'm going to win. Now, in the case of a total game of chance, there's no asmachta, because everybody realizes what? You could potentially what? Lose. You're a loser. It's up to nobody except the game of chance that we're playing. So, the Rama says that gambling, and this is an important rule, and this is the rule that's going to come back to dreidel. We're going to come back to Hanukkah right now. The Rama says, and this is what the Shilta Gevurim says, that if you show gemiras das, if you show that I commit myself to this promise of money by putting the money on the table, and you hand over the money to the table, then that shows that you are into you really promise the money. If I just say I'm in for 20, then that's just my word because I think I'm going to win. But if I take the money, we're playing poker, and I take the money, I put it down on the table, that shows that I am investing. And if you put the money down on the table, then the halacha is that shows that you care about it. It's only stealing when the person whose money you're taking didn't actually hand over the money initially. Didn't make a kinyan, a formal acquisition of the money to show, like by the wedding, right? Why does the chassan pick up the pen by the wedding? Because he's showing by doing this action that I promise everything in the ksuba. I promise to fulfill all of the money, the promises that come along with the ksuba. So now let's turn back to two cases. Let's turn back to dreidel and to Chinese auctions. Jews like two things, dreidel and Chinese auctions. So let's talk about those two things. According to the Rama, can you play dreidel for money? What would we say? For sure. The regular game is fine because dreidel is a total game of chance, without question. There's no skill to dreidel. I guess you have a weighted dreidel, whatever it may be. So we have a way to cheat in dreidel. So now, that would be fine. However, if you are a professional dreidel player, where you make your parnasa by playing dreidel, it's sad, but in addition, that would be a problem as well. However, according to the Rambam, and for Svardim, this is a case of asmachta. It's usher to take people's money, unless you what? You put the money in. If you put the money in, even the Rama wouldn't agree to that. Svardim would say it's a problem, because you're taking other people's money. Now, if you're playing with family, and you're all sharing the same amounts, and everybody walks away, and it's just an exchange of, it's all the father's money, and everyone's just exchanging the same money, so then I would assume it would be fine. It's interesting to note, though, I don't think Svardim have a history of playing dreidel. I don't know if it has to do with anything, but we only find dreidel by Ashkenazim. So I'm not exactly sure if there's a connection between the two. The other point is this. Chinese auctions, right? I'm sure you get magazines in the mail. This one's having a Chinese auction. And that one's having a Chinese auction. And it gets fancier every year. The shaitels get fancier. And the trips to Israel get fancier. So everybody likes Chinese auctions. So what would we say here? The Rama would say that a Chinese auction is a game of chance, right? And it's not biyado, and therefore it's not a problem. So Ashkenazim are good with Chinese auctions. So for the Rambam, it would seem that this is a game of chance. It's mesachik bekubya, as the Gemara says. You're essentially playing dice. You're putting out a random ticket that's going to get picked. But we saw that if you give a down payment, if you show gemiras das, then that's fine. So how does the Chinese auction work? You put money in to the charity, and then you get a ticket, and then if they pick your ticket, then you get that prize. Once you hand over the money to the charity, you've shown that you commit the money. 100% all in, without a problem. And therefore, even according to the Rambam, it would appear that even a Chinese auction would be okay as well. Meaning, a person can't say, if they lose the Chinese auction, I'd like my money back. It was nasmachta. I didn't really mean to have it. Once you hand over the money, it's theirs. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein has another tshuva about this. Rav Moshe says the whole discussion is ridiculous because Chinese auctions for like shuls and tzedakahs, it's not really gambling. What is it?
Charity.
It's tzedakah. It's tzedakah with a twist, right? Nobody has any intention that you're gambling. You're giving money to whatever institution it is, and it's fun that maybe you'll win, an iPad. But you're not really gambling. So Rav Moshe says Chinese auctions are not a real thing, and there's no problem at all. Okay. Rav Schechter also, I remember Rav Schechter saying as well that shuls can run a lottery because, as we said, that tzedakah collects from an asmachta. But Rav Schechter also points out as follows. Rav Schechter says that, I know we don't see this anymore, but it used to be that there would be gambling nights they have like a casino night in the shul, whatever it is. People get dressed up and they have tables, things like that. Rosh Hashanah points out if the Jewish people are doing something that leaves a bad taste in the eyes of the non-Jews, and it seems like, it's not nice to have like a casino night in the shul, then you can't do that. You have to be careful how you advertise what we're doing, because if it looks like a Chilul Hashem, it's not appropriate, it's pasnish that, you know, Jews should be doing such a thing. You have to be careful about such a practice as well. Let's turn now, in our remaining time, to lotteries. Let's discuss lotteries. So we all know the whole discussion about gambling now. We're experts on gambling. So let's turn to lotteries. Playing the lotteries, playing the Mega Millions for $1.6 billion, is that gambling? What would we say? Perhaps. So Rav Moshe Sternbach, who's the Rav of the Eidah Haredes in Yerushalayim, he has a tshuva in Tshuvas Hanagos in Chelek Dal, in Shin Yer Alf. And he brings three reasons why playing the lotto, as they call it in Israel, is not called gambling. He says the first thing is that a lottery ticket, it's not a gamble, it's an investment. A lottery ticket has value to it. I can resell the ticket, right? I can charge the same, I can sell that ticket for $2 all over the country. It has value. It could still cost $2. Therefore, when I buy a lottery ticket, it's not gambling. I'm investing in this piece of paper. It could be that the investment turns out good. It could be that investment goes bust and I'm out $2. But it's not a gamble. It's an investment in something that has value. That is reason number one. Number two, he says, is that what's the difference between a lottery and sitting at a poker table? At a poker table, if you take my money, so I hate your guts. That's just how it works, right? I'm out $20 because you took my money. And therefore, how do I feel that you stole my money, right? That's mine that you took from me. But if we play lotto, right, there are millions of people, thousands of people put their money in. I think that, you know, that person, that who, I don't know who it was, that person in South Carolina who now has my $2, they stole from me? I would never know them on the street. I could care less about them. I wish them luck. I hope they don't mess up their life. I hope everything is fine. But when you play lotto, I never have that feeling somebody's taking my money. We're so far apart. We're so intellectually distant from one another, says Rav Sternbach, that it's not considered that you're taking my money. The third reason he gives is that this cannot be a case of asmachta, because it's known from the outset that the odds of winning the lottery are ridiculous. Right, the statistics they were throwing around before the lotto was that a person has a better chance, unfortunately, of getting in a car accident than winning the lotto on his way to get the ticket. Right? It's so ridiculous. So I saw in a Torah journal called Hamavaser, which is a Torah journal that comes out of the Parsha. So they had Psukim. They had different things from Shlomo Zalman Orbach that had never been said before. New things that they found from the Talmidim. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach gave a beautiful mashal to explain someone who feels upset about not winning the Mega Millions. He said, if you need to call somebody, you have to call a friend, and you don't know their number, and you pick up the phone, right? You pick up the phone, you dial 7 random digits, and it doesn't go through. Are you going to throw down the phone in disgust? Ah, I can't believe I didn't get their number on the first try. Ridiculous. This is the same thing with winning the lotto. It's crazy. The odds of winning the lotto are ridiculous. You're going to get upset. You're going to think that somebody stole your money. It's so outlandish. It's such a game of chance that nobody in the world thinks they're going to win. And therefore, he says, Rav Sternbach, there's no problem at all winning the lotto. There's more to say about lotteries. There's a discussion about, is it Schar Shabbos? Let's say the lotto was drawn on Saturday. Is that considered making money on Shabbos? Is that like doing business on Shabbos? So I have a discussion about that. Perhaps we'll say that for another time. So I want to end and come back to just a bit of hashkafa about gambling in general. The disease of gambling and the disease of gambling addiction had already made its way into the Jewish people by the 1800s and in the beginning of the 1900s. Rav Yechiel Michal Stern, the famed Aruch HaShulchan, the Rav of Navardik, writes in the Aruch HaShulchan by Chanukah, because in addition to dreidel, there's also a meaning of kvitlach, right? To play cards by Chanukah as well. So he writes about this. Listen to what the Aruch HaShulchan says. Aval hasochem beklapim, those who play cards, own shin rav, he says their punishment is great. Ubavanoseinu harabim, he says because of our many sins, mispashta neged saras hazeh b'beis Yisrael, he says this affliction has unfortunately come into the Jewish home. Oy lanu she'alsa b'yameinu kach, woe is to us that in our generation we have people suffering from the affliction of gambling. This is 100 years ago he's writing. V'kama mine averos tilus b'zeh. How many sins come from it? Hu rachum yechaper. Avon Hashem should forgive us. Umi should be a cholos levata. Whoever can stop gambling, schara merubah ma'od, his reward is very great. We know that, like all addictions, unfortunately, the Jewish community is not immune to gambling as well. We have to be so careful, not only for ourselves, but how our children see us, and how our grandchildren see us, and what they value. Is it fun? Is it something they turn to? Well, I see, this person I respect is doing it, so maybe I'll try my hand as well. We have to be so careful about how we show ourselves and how we model. And says the Aruch HaShulchan, it's so dangerous. The Mishnah Berurah as well writes in the same siman, Yeshanashim Shetacha Zmiros V'Tishpachos, instead of singing Zmiros and engaging in holy things on the night of Chanukah, so they're going the Misachok HaKartan, they play cards, V'Har Beharishu, and it's such a bad thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Gros Moshe and Rachaim Chelek Dalad, Aval L'Sachek B'Klapim, to play with cards, U'Bingo, says Rav Moshe. U'Chadoma, Afshein ze al ze iser baro. He says, I can't tell you it's an iser in the Torah, but he says, Dvarim muchu arim. It's disgusting. It's not nice to go and to engage in gambling and playing with other people's money, he says. Chol makum shuhu, v'gam hu kamosha leitzim. It's a sitting of frivolity, says Rav Moshe. It's not a nice thing to do. And therefore, even at the end of the day, the Ramah, it says it's fine, it's not a smachta, and a person agrees to it, and it's a gemiras das, and the money's on the table. We have to be so careful how we act and how we perceive ourselves and how we show people around us how we handle our money and how we respect money, and to make sure we act in a proper way as well. When people gamble for two reasons. One is because you invest a little bit and you get something back. It's nice. I put in $2. I got $100. The person feels good about himself. But in addition, there's always a feeling of beating the odds, right? I'm special. And that's what drives the gambler. This time I'm going to get it. The last 100 times, I didn't have it. But this time, I'm going to get it. And that continues to push him more and more and more, that feeling that he's going to be different than anybody else. There are so many other ways that we can get a high, that we can have a feeling of being different, better, successful. There's so many kosher ways, so many appropriate ways to get that same high, that same adrenaline rush in proper ways as well. And even though we said, even though Mikra didn't at the end of the day, there's what to allow for gambling, but in a perspective of hashkafa, a perspective of what a Jew should be doing with their own time, it's probably something we should be staying away from, unless, there are dire circumstances, which I don't know what they would be. Okay, thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening.